But I will set a sign among them to send their escaped ones to the Gentiles, to Tarshish, in brackets Spain, to Pool, in brackets Africa, and Lud, in brackets Lydia, Meshech and Rosh, in brackets, or them who draw the bow, Tubal, in brackets Italy, and Javan, Greece, in brackets, to islands and places too remote to have heard news of or to have seen my glory, to the nations of my glory they shall tell. That's Isaiah chapter 66, verse 19, from the Ward Green version of 2003, and that's our daily scripture for today, little children, November 27th, 2024 of the Common Era, today's date. The Ark of Urartu, part 2, chapter 8, paragraph 2, begins with the photo of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during a civil rights march on Washington, D.C., August 28th of 1963 of the Common Era. And as to why Heber left Shinar, Jesus, how much later, said at Matthew 21 and 43, that the kingdom of God was not to be given to faithless ones, but was to be given to a worthy nation. During the days of Nimrod's rule, Shinong, in brackets Shelah, fought with him. And Huang Di, in brackets Heber, then came to Shinong's aid. So we've identified Shinong with Shelah, and Huang Di with Heber. 0710 hours, that at least one of Heber's descendants remained in Shinar, is indicated by Heber's descendant Abraham, who lived in Ur with his father Terah, according to the Bible, and the books of Jasher and Jubilees. Earlier in the book of Jubilees, Peleg was born to Heber and his wife Azurad, Jubilees 8 and 8, compare with Jasher 7:19, and as Azurad was the daughter of Nimrod, or as he's also called Nebrod, since Azurad was the daughter of Nimrod, Heber was Nimrod's son-in-law. Heber, having married the daughter of Nimrod, who was called Azurad. And Peleg, thus, was Nimrod's maternal grandson. 11:15 hours. These things are said in our written work above. I'm not sure if the expression maternal grandson is the correct expression there, but he was the grandson of Nimrod through Nimrod's daughter. 12:12 hours, the personal name of the man called the Yellow Emperor is Xuanwan, or Xuanwan, a Chinese word, a name here rendered in English as Axle of the Cart. Xiao Hao, or Sha Hao, English in quotes, little vast, or young vast sky, is what Sha Hao means. And he is the son of Huang Di, who became emperor after him, corresponding to Yoktan in the Bible, or Joktan, as he's called, meaning smallness, in quotes. So Joktan means, quote-unquote, smallness, which corresponds to little Vast, which is the name Shahau. And Joktan is the son of Heber, which fits with Shahau being the son of Xuanwan, the Yellow Emperor, who is Heber in our analogous biblical account. And there are shown to be two branches to the sons of Heber, a branch that stayed in Shinar, according to this, and a branch that is Chinese. Then we have an illustration of the jade mineral, beautiful gemstone, you might call it. I guess it is a gemstone, jade, and it's similar to the color of emerald or the green color. It's so beautiful, isn't it? I mean, trying to be objective, since my name is the same as the color, the name of the color, but it's a beautiful, beautiful shade of color, isn't it? Just phenomenal. Lovely to behold. And 2011, March 25th, 0716 hours, I wrote, quote-unquote Heber and quote-unquote ever are similar as the English concept of quote-unquote forever resembles the ideas of the endless turning of a wheel or of an axle of a cart. Remember, Heber meant in the Chinese name Xuanwan, the axle of a cart. That's what it means in English. So if Heber is to mean the same thing as the axle of a cart, well, the axle of a cart turns as a circle, like when people get married, they exchange rings because the ring is a circle that has the meaning of foreverness, or, you know, forever, because it never ends. A circle goes round and round. And so this idea is also similar here, the name Heber to the axle of a cart, which is the meaning of the name Xuanwan. And the concept of forever is a key concept in the Bible, I wrote at 0733 hours, for it relates to the idea of everlasting life. 0740 hours, I wrote. It may be reflected in Evagoras, who is also called Nimrod. 1017 hours, I wrote. The Yellow Emperor, or Eber, as we call him, is considered in the first systematic Chinese historical text, in brackets, Shi Ji, or Records of the Grand Historian, 109-91 BCE, written by Sima Qian, circa 145-86 BCE. This Yellow Emperor, being the first Chinese emperor established as historical to appear in the records. With the Yellow Emperor as the first emperor of the nation of China, it starts to fit a travel from antiquity. Heber, 2883-2479 BCE, those are our dates for his, duration of his life. Excuse me. I think that's allergies. Heber is the fifth generation after Noah. Okay, this is the important point that we've been making all along here, to try and demonstrate or understand how we can connect, why we believe China is connected to the Bible. Heber is the fifth generation after Noah by and by whatever way Jehovah directed him, he found his way to the Kunlun Mountains, where he built the Jade Palace, and then moved to eastern China, becoming the first of the official five emperors of the Grand Historian. at the much later determination, as we saw in about 100 BCE, when that was written, the records of the Grand Historian. Also, the determination of the beginning of the reign of the Yellow Emperor as a date is 2699 BCE. 2699 BCE, the year one of the rule of the Yellow Emperor. And it is apparent from the marriage of Heber to a daughter of Nebrod that the genealogy is humbly, truly about right. That's the end of the paragraph. We might comment about that, that the reason why that is making the genealogy apparently about right is because it was common for, in certainly much later ancient times, but albeit ancient times, for two warriors or two kings who fought against each other to have an intermarriage after they had completed their battle, so that the marriage of Heber to a daughter of Nebrod would be quite consistent, it would appear, with the idea that Heber was somebody who had fought with Nebrod. And in the Chinese, that would correspond to the Yellow Emperor, who fought against Chi Yu, and by so doing, delivered Shennong, who was needing assistance in his battle against Chi Yu. That's the story in the Chinese version of it. But it seems to correlate well with the idea of Heber marrying a daughter of Nimrod. So let's see, where is this name Azurad? Is it in Jasher or is it in Jubilees? It's in Jubilees 8 and 8. Let's see if we can find that. Jubilees 8 and 8. Right. Right, oh, it's in 8 and 7. Yeah, the birth of Peleg was 8 and 8. But look at Jubilees here. Where is it? Here it is. In 8 and 8 of Jubilees, Peleg was born. But these dates, of course, that are given here, we just ignore those because, as we know, the vast majority of all chronologers are completely in error, very much in error in their date giving. So we just ignore the dating, but we see in verse 7, Azurad, the daughter of Nebrod, became the wife of Eber. And this is the book of Jubilees, so everything is calculated according to which Jubilee was in effect, or the time, according to the time of which Jubilee, during which, according to the time during which it occurred, you know. But the dating according to this Book of Jubilees is completely fallacious, according to, at least it's not consistent with anything that we obtain any other way, using the other methods that, which are many, other methods that we've used to obtain the chronology. The Book of Jubilees is virtually useless for its chronology, so we just ignore that. They were calculating each jubilee as either 49 or 50 years long and so on, but as I said, unfortunately, there's no way to use that chronology, but there's still a genealogy there. Even though they got the chronology wrong, at least they made an attempt. They made an attempt to get the chronology instead of just abandoning any hope of the chronology. They gave a chronology, but they also gave things that are less likely to be wrong, which is the marriage of certain individuals to other individuals, right? The names of the people seems to be less likely to be wrong, although it's not really known to be reliable though either. It's just the best information that we have been able to obtain about, excuse me, such an ancient time period. So that's it for today's study, little ones. It's wonderful to have done that. It seems to me there's a lot of censorship in the world, and this is one example of censorship, right, where the time period of Nimrod and the beginning of the history of the world was in a way censored. Somehow we don't have records of it. It was either censored or just, I mean, why would you just abandon it? You know, or why would it be so poorly preserved? You know, we could see it as some form of censorship, right, by different political factions, because the world at the time was dividing up in different factions into different countries. For the first time, the nations were being formed at that time. Such an important historical period, which we date to the 28th century BCE, 2699, but even before that, 2745 is what we give as the dispersion date. But we've given several interesting dates around that time period in this article, which you can go back and look up for yourself if you wish. But no, there's some interesting things happening. I've noticed that we've got lots of time to talk here. I don't know how much I want to talk about all these different things that are currently going on, but one thing that's coming up is the idea that Canada does a lot of trade with the U.S. We almost do as much in both, there's almost as much trade in either direction, export and import. It's hundreds of billions of dollars that Canada trades with the U.S., both import and export. So if we're exporting and there's a 25% tariff or whatever the tariff is on the goods going from Canada to the U.S., that's potentially going to be quite a loss of money for Canada if the purchase of those goods is prevented, right, by the fact that the tariff will raise the prices in the U.S. so that U.S. citizens may be less inclined to buy the Canadian goods. And we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars that those goods are typically bringing in for Canada by selling them to the U.S. And the U.S. is by far the biggest trading partner with Canada compared to any other. So, however, you know, if I mean, all we can do, I mean, we can't retaliate, but there's a Bible principle, Proverbs 23 and 6, that says, do not feed yourself with the food of anyone of ungenerous eye. So, if the president of the U.S. is placing a tariff on Canadian goods, that is as though he has an ungenerous eye toward Canada. Well, so the principle says we shouldn't feed ourselves with the food of that person or with the U.S. goods. We shouldn't be purchasing U.S. goods then, even though they are also hundreds of billions that we typically purchase from the U.S. But nowadays, that's not nearly as big a problem for us if we are to no longer purchase goods from the U.S. It might be a problem for computer goods because we've purchased from Apple, for example. But Apple, most of their goods, they're made in China anyway. Everybody's products are made in China. But the money is going to the coffers of the Americans if they're an American company. So we should seriously consider ceasing the purchase of U.S. goods because we shouldn't be feeding ourselves with the food of anyone of ungenerous eye, as Proverbs 23 and 6 says. A very simple principle. It's not animosity. There's no animosity involved. It's a Bible principle, but it's a sound principle. Of course, all the Bible principles are sound principles. Do not feed yourself with the food of anyone of ungenerous eye, Proverbs 23 and 6, nor show yourself craving his tasty dishes. Do not eat the food of a stingy person. Do not crave his delicacies. You see? So we should not attempt to benefit from the American economy if they're going to place a tariff on our goods. It just is irrational. It's just illogical. It's not that there's any animosity. So we should be seeking to purchase from other places. We have many trading partners throughout the world. There's Switzerland, France, the whole European Union, of course. There's China, Japan, there's South America, where we get food in the winter. For our Canadian winter, when we don't produce a lot of fruit, we get a lot from South America then. There's Mexico also. There's all kinds of places in the Far East, like Taiwan and Vietnam, and places who manufacture things for, in some cases, they manufacture for American companies, but maybe we can purchase it directly from China or some other Far Eastern country like Japan, China, whatever. Because if we purchase from the Far East, sooner or later, we're also going to see that the prices are going to come down because the prices for goods coming from China have been greatly elevated, falsely elevated, because of the greed of the middlemen who are living in our part of the world, the West. And as more and more Chinese companies are coming to the market, they're able to undercut the prices of these greedy people who have come in first, because the labor prices or costs of labor in China are, and many of these other countries too, are far less than the cost of labor in the West, and so they're able to sell these products. And we see it from time to time, fairly frequently on Amazon, products that are well below the price of what we would pay in North America being sold on Amazon for at these lower prices from China. But even then, those people in China are making a lot of money, even though they're undercutting. Maybe they're undercutting the price of the goods that we're buying now by one half. And they're still making a lot of money because it's like a factor of 10 or more that the labor is costing them less by that factor of 10 or more. So, I mean, it just depends on things made eventually correct themselves, and perhaps the labor will not always be so cheap in China, but as it is, or as it has been in the past, the vastly more inexpensive labor in China has meant that we're going to be able to get, and still probably will, be able to get much cheaper goods from China than we can from anywhere else, or actually from anywhere in the Far East, much cheaper than from anywhere else, because, well, although Japan has much higher costs because it's such a small country, and real estate is hugely expensive in Japan, of course. There are lots of reasons why the Japanese products are not as benefited by cheap labor. But what we know, we can buy from so many other sources. As long as there's not some kind of trade restrictions between us and that country, we can make the purchase. But the other thing that, for example, there are trade restrictions between Canada and Russia, or between the U.S. and Russia, and between many countries in Russia, I believe. These restrictions are in place because of certain things that Russia has been doing that have been unpalatable or disagreeable to these other countries. So what we're saying is we want to deal with friendly nations, and we want to, we shouldn't rely on our own ingenuity. We shouldn't rely on humans, right? We should trust in Jehovah, the true God, the all-powerful creator. He can provide a solution to all of these problems that we might face with regard to our trading partners, and our trading goods, our goods trading problems, because it's going to be more difficult to ship things from China to Canada, but we can ship, I guess, all those things from the Far East can be shipped, and they will be shipped likely from the Far East across the Pacific, across the Pacific Ocean to Vancouver or somewhere on the west coast of Canada, like Vancouver. That's where these things will arrive in Canada. So it's a fairly direct route, and the things from the European Union will ship across the Atlantic, of course, from Europe in that direction to the east coast of Canada. And then I think they come up to St. Lawrence and arrive at Montreal, typically, or something like that. But, I mean, there are ways of shipping directly from both Europe in the west, and that includes Great Britain, of course, and Africa. All of is not included in Europe, but that's another place from which we can ship directly across the Atlantic to Canada. And South America can be shipped, I suppose, around. I'm not sure how they typically ship it by boat, or if it's not delivered by air, which some of these lighter things, I guess, can be delivered by airmail, right? Or air shipping. But they can be shipped maybe directly, and they don't always have to go through the United States either. A lot of these things can be shipped directly by the trade routes of the ocean or whatever. So I'm not sure how the trading is going to take place, but if the U.S. doesn't want to deal with us, or if they wish to be preventing the free trade, then there's really a good logical reason for us to seek other trading partners. And there are many advantages in having other partners and not being influenced by the American culture, because, for one thing, it's a culture of censorship. I want to say that too. I've noticed that all my life. The Americans have always censored the Canadian opinions, always have tried to prevent any opinion other than their own from being propagated. Right, and they have their own way of doing that. In this case, it's supposedly being done by these tariffs, for one thing, but the idea of censorship is a very communist sort of thing. So it's and the whole idea of the American intertrade between different North American entities, that's sort of a communist idea, you know, in a way. It's not really as open as it seems, and there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot of censorship by the American culture of these other cultures. But the same thing is true, of course, in Russia, where the censorship of ideas is extremely prevalent, but there's not a lot of difference in the way that, or in the fact of the censorship, the fact that there's censorship of the free exchange of ideas. You know, it's, they don't want the free exchange of ideas. They don't want it in Russia. They don't want it in the U.S. And they have gun laws in the U.S. that don't make any sense. The Second Amendment of the U.S. does not make any sense, and that's why they have all the... I mean, the way they're applying it makes no sense. It was instituted to allow people to produce militia that would defend the republic. That was the purpose of the Second Amendment. It, wasn't it? It was not intended for individuals to carry weapons and shoot each other, which is what it's being used to do. So that the application of the Second Amendment in the U.S., we should make it clear to the U.S. that we're not going to be attempting to have any serious trading relationship with them until they fix their application of the Second Amendment to make it a peaceful application, such as we have had, and other countries also have had for many years. So that individuals should not be allowed to carry firearms. That's a nonsensical idea. Okay, so we're just about at the end of our study. It's November 27th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 21:24 hours, North American Eastern Time. Thank you so much for listening and watching. Once again, I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. In my behalf, this is Sissy. And this is Star saying bye for now. The study today was from the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. Once again, the same article that we've been studying. Today's study was from Chapter 8, Paragraph 2. And we've just got a few more seconds. Oh, I got a little bit sick last night. I caught some kind of a throat infection, I think, so I quickly took a couple of grams of vitamin C, and I've taken about 6 up till now, since that time, 6 grams I've taken. I think I've got it under control, but we have to be quick about responding to these infections if we're going to use the vitamin C the way that is so effective. So, have a wonderful day. Bye for now.